Welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the world of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are here on this lovely Friday as of the release date of this. I hope it's a lovely day, whatever day you're listening to this on. And we are here to talk about minutes 4 through 5 of Dune Part 2, where we are picking up on the sand dune with Jessica and Paul and Baby, collectively referred to as PB&J from now on. You agreed to it, John.
Whether or not the audience agrees, we have yet to find out.
It's one of the downsides of recording in advance. We don't really know too much about the feedback that we're going to get. And by the time it does get to us, too late. Sorry.
Oops.
Well,
then not to say we haven't changed due to listener feedback before.
Oh, of course.
Because someone used to say minutes 4 and 5.
I said that today.
No, you said minute 4.
No, no, I specifically added an S in there.
Oh, you piece of shit. Fuck you.
I think you have just been accustomed to it.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
The audience will call you out on your bullshit.
That's fine. That's fine. I got thick skin. I can actually don't yell at me.
Stop.
Please don't yell at me. So let's get back to Paul. Let's get back to PB&J on the sand dune. Oh man. Have you ever remember like on school field trips when you get that sandwich and maybe some dirt got in it? That's a crunchy, crunchy sandwich.
No, because I kept my sandwiches in fucking Ziploc bags like a civilized person.
Oh, well, yeah. I can only imagine what a PB&J would do on a sand dune like this.
I mean, I've got some fucking bread and some peanut butter and jelly here, and I can just go out back and get some sand and put it in there if you want me to for you.
Well, we'll pick that up after recording.
Okay.
So there's our trio are still on the dunes, and some other Fremen kind of take position to Paul's right. They come up and the camera pans around and we see Stilgar.
Yeah, Paul's just staring. So Paul's got his like side of his head resting against the dune, mm-hmm. and he's just looking at Stilgar right in the eyes, who has the opposite side of his head. So they're both staring at each other.
Well, his eyes are closed.
Yeah, but he's just listening, I think, through the dune for footsteps or whatever. And he opens his eyes up, and he basically says to Paul, "Stay here." As he then, you know, gets up and whistles or warbles almost.
He makes like a bird call.
Yeah.
Almost, which is really cool. Like, I know that was done in post, but it's still a cool thing to think about.
How do you know? Javier Bardem may just be that good at bird calls.
That is very true. It is wrong of me to assume his bird call abilities.
Yeah. Just assuming that the guy doesn't know bird warbles.
That's true. That's true. Javier, I know you're listening. Please let us know. So, and he, which is, so the bird call was a signal to the other Fremen, and they get up and follow him down the dune in the opposite direction of the group that left with Chani.
Yeah, they basically just leave Paul and, well, PB&J and Jameis to go.
Yep.
J2G. They're on the dune by themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just like, all right, stay here.
Yeah.
We got this.
I wonder how long it, because Paul didn't really see the other direction too much. Like he didn't see those Fremen run off.
Well, you hear them kind of all get up and run off.
So I imagine him just being like, what the fuck? Just going to leave me out here like this? But he has directions. He has orders. Stilgar said, stay here. So what does Paul do? They leave.
Well, they head up the dune to glance at the oncoming enemies. And we see some Harkonnen forces descending from their ship, which is just floating in space.
Yep.
And this, so yesterday's episode, I talked a little bit about, or I teased a little bit about how there's some stuff from Art and Soul that I wanted to talk about with cinematography.
Yeah.
But first things first, there is so much DNA from Denis' previous works at play in this scene here. Because when I watched this in the theaters, the first time that you and I went to go see it early and everything, like I was just thinking to myself, this is Blade Runner 2049 DNA all over the place with just like that single floating ship and the descending, like something about it with like the lighting, with it being all, you know, orange and everything. It just felt so Blade Runner in the sequences where
they go to Vegas, right?
Yeah. To go find Harrison Ford's character. Deckard.
Decker. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh God. I almost lost some nerd cred.
Dude, we were going to get fucking flamed if I didn't fucking pull Deckard out of my ass. But yeah, so I looked it up because I wanted to see like, okay, who did the cinematography for Blade Runner? Who did the cinematography for Dune? They are two different cinematographers. Blade Runner 2049 was shot by Roger Deakins, whereas both Dune Part 1 and Part 2 were shot by Greg Fraser. Okay. So it's not the same cinematographer, but still very similar, obviously, because of Denis directing, you know, styles and everything that we saw here in this place. But while we're on the subject, I want to talk about like the coloring of the shot because,
And we'll just pause 2 seconds. You mentioned Roger Deakins and Blade Runner.
Yes.
That is a very, very, very heavy hitter cinematographer in movies.
Yeah.
Roger Deakins. Think of most of your favorite movies. There's a good chance that Roger Deakins was the cinematographer.
I would assume you just pulled up his IMDb.
Well, I know that just off the top of my head, but 1917, Blade Runner, Empire of Light, Sicario.
I actually watched Sicario last night.
Assassination of Jesse James, No Country for Old Men, Prisoners, Barton Fink, Fargo.
All right, so aside from Dune, I think Zach and I both share No Country for Old Men as one of our favorite movies.
A very good one, yes.
So, yeah. God damn. All right.
Fucking stacked.
Yeah.
Stacked resume. And Greg Fraser ain't no slouch either.
No, he's not.
Zero Dark Thirty, The Batman, Rogue One. Were some of his, The Mandalorian, he did the TV show for that. Let's see, what are some other ones that stand out? A lot. I mean, he's done a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah.
But in the past, 10 years or so, that's where he's come into, come into his own.
And obviously Dune Part 1, in addition to Part 2.
Of course.
But yeah, while we're on the subject, I want to talk about some of the coloring and, not only in the previous minute, but in this next minute, but also all of next week's episodes and, you know, some of the weeks after or some of the days after. So Art and Soul actually goes into a lot of depth about not only the coloring of the scene, but the decisions around some of the formats that the movie was shot in. So Dune Part 1 was shot on IMAX, but only for the exterior scenes, which was really only about 40% of the film.
Only, yes.
Well, a lot of it was shot interior on set.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Shit. Yeah.
On sets that were made or whatever. Dune Part 2 was shot exclusively on IMAX.
Nice.
Both interior and exterior. But for the scenes that we have here, Fraser used film people, I'm sorry if I like mispronounce things here, but he used a RELF camera with a visible light IR cut filter to remove blues and greens from the spectrum that we see, which is what really drives out that like red orange hue on everything.
Yeah.
But then in post they used the Unreal Game Engine, photogrammetry, drones, and ground LiDAR to establish time of day for each shot to like color correct and everything later on.
Cool.
But they also used it to determine the timing of certain scenes, one that we'll talk about next week, to make sure that all of the lighting and placement of the sun and everything would match up in sequence with everything else that's happening.
Nice.
So the production team, obviously they went hard on all of Part 1 and they went hard on the entirety of Dune Part 2, but like especially this, Art and Soul talks about this entire sequence as an incredibly tightly choreographed and heavily like storyboarded. So by the time they got on to location in Jordan, there was no like, all right, what are we shooting? It's just immediately boom, 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 boom. We got to do this one here now, 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 now.
That's cool.
Because of where everything lies. Because you can't really, you can kind of fake it in heavily like wooded areas.
Sure.
With the timing of things. But when you're out in the desert and you have no natural shade of things, you have to make sure that your shadows across the sands are lining up properly.
And if we learned anything from the George Lucas messings with Star Wars, is that CG does not always look good in the harsh light of a desert.
No, so, not at all.
So doing as much practical and planning and you know, getting the lighting correct on the first try, very important.
Speaking of lighting, this scene was actually originally slated to be a nighttime scene, but Denis wanted the daytime eclipse and that frightening, surreal look that we talked about a couple episodes back. And, you know, we're still catching up with Paul and the Fremen only a couple hours after the end of Dune Part 1. And Denis specifically wanted the audience to be disoriented like Paul is in this moment and not really have a full grasp of what's going on, which is what made them, you know, really lean into the natural eclipse that was happening, because you and I thankfully were able to, you know, get a pretty good chunk of this latest eclipse that hit us, what, last year, the year before?
Oh God, it was last year.
And then there was the one in 2017 that also passed over Atlanta.
There was one in between them. But yeah. I remember the one last year. I remember the 2017 one, but there was one a couple years after the 2017 one. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
When, but whatever.
And if you've never been in the path of a natural eclipse before, like even if it's not a complete one, it's still super weird.
Yeah.
And like, there's some shit that like just goes on, whether it's, you know, in front of my house, I've got a pond that has like a bunch of frogs in it. And when the eclipse was happening, they were all just like acting up crazy. Like it was nighttime almost.
Yeah.
You know, birds do a bunch of weird shit. My cats were doing weird stuff. Like it was really strange to see all these animals adapting to it. Arrakis doesn't have that, but it does have the just harsh and sudden weird changes to lighting and like weird shadow stuff that happens too.
That's cool. That is a fun fact, John. Yeah. Thank you for that.
And they wanted the red to avoid the feeling of a cold, wet swimsuit of just dropping you into this environment. So, and that cold, wet swimsuit is a direct quote from Art and Soul of Dune, so don't at me on that one.
Fair enough.
Anyways.
Makes me... I don't like that.
Back to the movie. Jessica indicates that she and Paul should retreat downright in their battle language. And PB&J go sliding down some dunes and press themselves against a rock wall, trying to blend in for safety.
It's true. And we hear some more Harkonnen talk. They're just huddling real close to the rocks.
They're getting, the Harkonnens are getting closer.
Yep. And my final note for the final week back is something we've said before, but boy, does it feel good to be back in minute format.
Oh, I love it. Welcome back to the Dune Minute.
That's right.
As is tradition, it's the end of a week. You know what that means. Shai Halutz.
How many makers are you giving this week, John?
I'm stuck between 7.5 and 8. I think this is a great way to open this movie.
Okay.
We're mirroring Dune Part 1, but then we're into a high-stakes, weird, not quite fully action sequence, but we've got some tension right off the rip.
Yep.
It one thing that I like too is there is the little bit of exposition, but this movie is operating fully under the premise of you have watched Part 1 at the very least, but this feels like... So Part 1, we talked about a lot of needing to adapt Dune for the masses. But this opening sequence feels like this is an opening sequence for fans of Dune.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Part one, we needed a lot of exposition early on, mm-hmm. and a lot of that conversation between Paul and Jessica, and like
just general world building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The world building's been done for us. We are right in it.
Yeah. I agree. I'll join you in 7. There.
I said 7.5, but you know.
All right, fine. 7.5. Welcome to the Doom Minute Podcast, where the points are made up and nothing matters.
It's a great way to open, and we are back, baby.
That's right. All right, cool. That's the end of my notes for this week. We will be back next week to continue the Harkonnen advance on Paul, Jessica, and babies.
PB&J.
PB&J's location. And why don't you tell the folks, the fine folks, where to find us?
Well, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky. At Dune Minute. You can also email duneminute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch. And if you prefer your podcasts on YouTube, this episode and all of our previous episodes are available there as well. We'll be back on Monday with more of the Dune Minute. And we'll see you then for more daily uploads.
All right. See you then.